With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you're listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jack Club 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Let's get tonight started off with A Little Higher Ground. Hello there, and starting out this week in science news, we're going to talk about humans. Child's remains reveal early North American life, plus ancient canines and convincing metaphors. Ancient man's best friend. In prehistoric Siberia, hunter-gatherers buried certain dogs and even one wolf, just as they interred human comrades, suggesting that these canines were regarded as persons with souls, say anthropologist Robert Losey of the University of Alberta in Canada and his colleagues. Several dogs placed in graves with valuable offerings at a 7,400-year-old cemetery Mary had apparently lived among people for many years. The researchers have reported this in an upcoming Journal of Anthropological Archaeology. A nearby cemetery contains a grave of a male wolf with a person's detached head nestled between its legs, a sign that the wolf was meant as a protector in the afterlife. Now, this little bit is about war in the family and the effects on children. Now, for kids living in a war zone, emotional difficulties often arise more from beatings by a parent and other types of family violence than from witnessing conflict-related horrors, according to a year-long study of Afghani youngsters and their parents led by Yale anthropologist Catherine Panter Brick. Youngsters exposed to war violence often displayed post-traumatic stress syndromes, but depression and behavior problems worsen mainly among kids whose families became increasingly violent, possibly in response to the ongoing warfare. The researchers have reported this in an upcoming Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychology. Now, the early American child story, this is very interesting. A child's cremated skeletal remains found in the ruins of an 11,500-year-old house in central Alaska offer a rare look at daily life and death among early colonizers of the Americas. Prehistoric foragers lived at the Alaskan site while hunting and fishing during the summer, say anthropologist Ben Potter of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and his colleagues. The child's body was placed in a pit formerly used as a hearth, they report in the February 25th issue of Science. Following cremation, residents apparently abandoned the house. Child burials and houses of about the same age in Siberia and elsewhere in North America resemble the Alaskan discoveries. Now, how we humans actually communicate with each other is always intriguing, and metaphors are forceful persuaders. These turns of phrase unobtrusively sway people's opinions about how to deal with social problems such as rising crime rates, say Stanford psychologist Paul Thibodeau and Lara Boroditsky. A large majority of volunteers endorse police enforcement after reading about a crime wave described as a beast, whereas most favored social reforms to treat root causes of lawbreaking after reading the escalating crime is a virus. These researchers reported this online February 23rd in PLOS 1. In each case, participants said that crime statistics, not metaphors, shape their opinions. Metaphor effects held regardless of people's political affiliation. So you can check that out in February 23rd, PLOS 1. And next up after this little music interlude is Stories in Molecules, Matter, and Energy. Yes, you spin me right round, and for the first time in a laboratory setting, physicists have linked the motion of a particle with its spin. Such, quote, spin-orbit coupling, unquote, could help researchers build futuristic versions of devices such as transistors. Ian Spielman of the Joint Quantum Institute in Gaithersburg, Maryland, cooled rubidium atoms to ultra-chilly temperatures until they formed a quantum liquid, then watched as the atoms underwent spin-orbit coupling. Spielman reported the findings on February 18th at a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Now, lab experiments that collide two jets of positron-electron pairs may help physicists identify the source of gamma ray bursts in distant galaxies. Hoi Chen of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in Livermore, California, proposed February 18th at a meeting of the same American Association for the Advancement of Science reported this. Now, researchers detect these intense flashes of light about once a day, but no one knows their source. Chen and colleagues reported last year creating and controlling jets of electrons and their antiparticles, positrons, in the lab. Now, she plans to whack them into each other. Now, this collision is expected to create a shock wave that will accelerate particles to high energies and emit radiation. If the signal resembles that seen in space, it may point to a culprit. So, we will keep that in our queue and bring more to you as it develops. Quantum protein folding. New theoretical work may help explain the long-standing puzzle of why protein molecules fold and unfold at different rates and at different temperatures. The answer lies in the quantum world. Scientists from Inner Mongolia University in Hohhot, China, suggest that a paper posted February 18th at arxiv.org, they propose that proteins undergo a quantum transition, jumping from one state to the next so that their folding rate changes essentially instantaneously with temperature. And now for some news about the Earth and the environment. Rising temperatures will release significant amounts of carbon into the atmosphere from thawing permafrost, according to one of the first studies to quantify how much of that carbon will contribute to global warming. A combination of global climate simulations suggests that frozen Arctic lands will go from being a net absorber to a net emitter of carbon sometime in the next decade. Researchers from Boulder, Colorado reported this online February 15th in TELUS. They project that by 2200, Arctic permafrost extent could shrink by about 30-60%. Ugh. So we'll be reporting that as that study continues. Volcanologists have explained the puzzling seismic tremor that often precedes or accompanies volcanic eruptions. The signal, researchers say, comes from a column of magma rising through the crust surrounded by a ring of gas bubbles. The bubbles bounce off of and corral the magma, causing the rising column to oscillate back and forth. That oscillation matches the frequency of tremor signals seen at many eruptions. Scientists from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver and from Yale University reported this in the February 24th issue of Nature. The work could help in forecasting eruptions. Now here's something to sneeze at. The planet's slowly rising air temperatures over the past 15 years have extended the period that ragweed sheds its allergy-provoking pollen. In the northern United States and Canada, this can lengthen hay fever season some 2 to 4 weeks, according to a team of U.S. scientists. Now, later fall frost and briefer winters have played a big role in extending the seasonal need for antihistamines in tissues, the researchers concluded in a paper posted online February 21st in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And more about spinning around. Earth's inner core rotates faster than the rest of the planet, but more slowly than scientists had thought. Earlier studies proposed that the inner core, made mostly of solid iron, spins up to 1 degree faster per year than the fluid outer core. Geoscientists have now studied seismic waves bouncing off the inner core to show that it rotates more like 1 degree faster per million years. The finding resolves several puzzles about Earth's deep interior, such as how the core's hemispheres have managed to retain distinct physical identities. Scientists at the University of Cambridge in England reported this online February 20th in Nature Geoscience. And drugged fish. Yep, you heard me right. Drugged fish. Long thought that this was true. Now they're proving it in a laboratory setting. Very low levels of certain widely prescribed anti-inflammatory drugs raise blood sugar and lower white blood cell counts in fish, at least in the lab, a new study finds. Wild fish might develop similar problems, say researchers at Brunel University in England, because the same glucocorticoids have been detected in surface waters. The likely source? Human sewage or runoff from landfills of drugs discarded as trash. Effects of different glucocorticoids would be probably additive, the authors note. That suggests that concentrations in some rivers might be high enough to affect fish. The researchers say this in a report posted online February 15th in the Environmental Science and Technology. Very interesting. Yes, we do affect the world in which we live. And more we're finding out, not in a good way. Now, a little bit more about humans, but this is more about biology and the body and the brain. Electrodes planted deep into the brains of people suffering from severe depression improved symptoms for up to 6 years, researchers reported February 18th at that same meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. 3 to 6 years after neurosurgeons implanted electrodes in their brains, most patients still showed gains, fewer signs of depression, better physical health, and the ability to hold down jobs. No late developing side effects were evident from the procedure. However, sadly to report, two of the subjects committed suicide during depressive episodes, and this was reported by neuroscientist Helen Mayberg of Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta. The implants are used to help people who have depression who have not responded to other treatments. Now, here's a story on First Foods. And this is long been said by mothers and grandmothers the world over. Taste preferences can be set very early in life, new studies reveal. Now they're catching up to mom and grandma. Babies whose mothers fed them salty foods between 2 and 6 months had a stronger preference for salt at 6 months than did babies who hadn't eaten salty stuff, Gary Beauchamp of the Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia reported February 19th at a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Very busy meeting. He and his colleagues previously found that mothers who drank carrot juice during the last trimester of pregnancy had babies who liked the juice at 6 months old. Very interesting. U.S. journals in a broad range of fields have long exhibited global supremacy in what's termed impact, the frequency with which their papers are cited by other peer-reviewed publications. In the February PLOS-1, researchers now report the impact factors for European publications grew faster over the past decade than their U.S. counterparts in 2 biological and 2 medical fields. U.S. publications still dominate in all 4 studied fields, biology, cell biology, infectious diseases, and critical care, but by a far smaller margin, except in biology, where the impact of U.S. papers actually pulled ahead of those from European journals. Very interesting. I guess we're all getting on the same page. I'm not sure what that means. It could have something to do with funding. I don't know. And moving on to the brain, brain cells tag memories using early chemical marks on proteins associated with DNA, researchers at the University of Bordeaux in France say. The team examined 2 areas of the brain involved in remembering smells to learn how rats form memories of odors for foods that are safe to eat. One of the earliest steps in the process of forming a long-term memory involves chemically tagging or acetylating a protein called histone H3, the researchers report in the February 18th issue of Science. The chemical tag marks brain cells associated with the memory in parts of the brain where the memory will be stored. Sorry, couldn't resist following the story that was right before that with a French report. So, sorry, U.S. scientists, get on the ball. And next up, we're going to be talking about news in Atom and Cosmos, the right mix of dark matter to build a galaxy, plus Cleopatra's twins and an electric enceladus in this week's news.
Born Helena Jane with a restless soul, she moved west to California. became a centerfold. But once you change your name, well, the pieces fall. Now she hardly recognizes herself at all. And there's never any rain, and you wanted a hollow little game. And you wanted looking for the real, but you've done it all. So long, put your blue jeans back on, girl, go home. Remember Hollywood, not America. So long, put your blue jeans back on, girl, go home. Remember Hollywood, not America. Somewhere else, you can make $1 million. You might lose yourself, and you can take the heat. Will your heart grow cold? They say acting's just pretending, but even that gets old. And there's never any way. You want a hollow little game, and you want looking for a thrill, but you.
And now, Dark Recipe for Galaxies. When it comes to dark matter, the mass equivalent of 300 billion suns is the Goldilocks number, just the right amount for making a galaxy teeming with stars. A new report spotlights the role that dark matter, the invisible material that accounts for more than 80% of the matter in the cosmos, plays in pulling in gas and stars to form the earliest galaxies. Too little dark matter and a developing galaxy peters out. Too much, and gas won't cool efficiently to form a single large galaxy, as Santa Corey of the University of California, Irvine, and his colleagues reported in the February 24th issue of Nature. Electric Enceladus, I love saying that, plumes of water vapor and heat emanating from below the surface of Saturn's moon Enceladus could be powered by electric current, a previously overlooked source of power for the features. The current would be generated by Enceladus' interactions with Saturn's magnetic field. Although the current would provide no more than 25% of the observed heat, it might prevent or at least slow the refreezing and sealing of cracks from which the plumes vent into space. Kevin Han of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, and his colleagues calculated this in an upcoming Journal of Geophysical Research Planets. Now, Cleopatra's moons. Just as Cleopatra, the queen of Egypt, gave birth to twins, so has Cleopatra, the asteroid. Planetary scientists have discovered that the asteroid has two moons, each about 8 kilometers across, spawned in the past 100 million years. Now, these moons were most likely created when a chunk of space debris sideswiped Cleopatra, spinning up the asteroid and causing it to shed material. A French-American team reported this in the February Icarus. Now, by tracking the orbits of the newfound moons, the team measured the density of Cleopatra and found that the asteroid is loosely bound, amalgam of metal and rock. And an organic delivery, since we're talking about, you know, babies and all. Comets may have seeded the atmospheres of both Earth and Saturn's moon Titan. Oh boy, here we go. The Spanish researchers based their proposal on the similar abundances of nitrogen and organic compounds in the atmospheres of the two bodies, even though Titan resides in a much colder part of the solar system. Now, Titan could have incorporated icy comet-like bodies rich in nitrogen and organic compounds from its immediate neighborhood during formation, while comets could have delivered the material to Earth a few hundred million years later after the planet had formed. The researchers make their case in an upcoming planetary and space science paper posted online at arxiv.org. on February 22nd, and that leads us into our special presentation for the evening. And tonight's special presentation is Lights Out. It's called The Meteor Man. It was originally broadcast 12/22/1942, and it's a play by Arch Obler. Frank Martin was the announcer, and it starred Pedro de Cordoba, who was the Meteor Man. A shooting star brings to Earth a protoplasmic invader from a dying planet. Will its unholy hunger for human flesh doom the Earth? Well, stay tuned and find out.
Ionized Yeast presents Lights Out. Everybody.
It is later than you think.
Lights Out brings you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, so if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you, calmly but sincerely, to turn off your radio now.
My name, Arch Obler. Tonight, a story I enjoyed writing for you because, well, frightening as the thought may be, it could happen.
And furthermore, I might speak frankly, my dear Diane. The basic thing wrong with woman is her nose. Let's cut it off.
Russell Adams.
Then there's the matter of her ears. Look at them.
Well?
They're too obvious. Cut them off, too.
No nose, no ears. Oh, a fine art critic you turned out to be.
Oh, is this thing odd?
Russ Adams, I hate you. I think it's the best piece of sculpture I've ever done.
Egomaniac.
Oh, will you go away?
Not until I tell my wife how much I adore her. How about stopping the artistic endeavors for the night and romancing with the old man?
Any night.
Come on. Out on the veranda. There's a moon.
Spoken as Professor Russell J. Adams, instructor of astronomy at our beloved university.
I don't know a single scientific fact about this moon. It's a special satellite, built entirely for romance.
Then it's a date.
After you, fair Diane? Why do you laugh?
Just thinking it's a good thing we haven't any neighbors, or they'd think we were honeymooning.
10 years and 2 more weeks.
Sweet.
Why?
For remembering.
Where the sigh?
Oh, it's such a lovely night.
Yes. You're very lovely with the moonlight in your hair.
Darling.
335 days out of the year, moonlight to me is just a reflected light of the sun. A light interesting only that it may be analyzed spectroscopically. But these 30 days of our vacation, Diane. Oh, what a magical change. It's a soft lover's moon hanging in the heavens only to brighten your loveliness.
Oh, and people wonder why I can't get excited about Ronald Coleman.
Coleman? Who's he?
Spoken like a true professor. He's a motion picture star. An absolute paragon of romance.
Oh, well, perhaps I shouldn't neglect my movie going. Oh, so much, I mean, with such paragons to teach one.
You do all right. Oh, Russell.
What's the matter?
I saw the brightest shooting star.
Is that all? The way you gasp, I thought you saw the angel of death himself galloping over those meadows.
There's another one. Look, Russell.
My dear, for 11 months out of the year, the heavens have my full and undivided attention. Oh, but during this blessed month, let the heavens fall, I can't be bothered.
I never saw such bright shooting stars.
Yes, and another thing, my dear. As the wife of an accredited professor of astronomy, I think it no more than fitting that you give the phenomena that you observed its proper name, namely the fall of a meteor.
There's another one, and another. Oh, Russ, how bright and beautiful.
They travel at such a tremendous rate, the friction of our atmosphere burns them into a fiery vapor.
There's more of them. Look, one after the other. I've never seen so many shooting stars. I mean so many meteors in all my life. Oh, so that's why you wanted me out here. You knew about this meteor shower, didn't you?
It's one of heaven's free spectacles in this constellation. Every 3 years, and this happens to be the third year.
How frightening.
Why frightening?
Those great masses of stone and iron coming from who knows where in interstellar space, traveling millions and millions of miles and then going up in such glorious flame just as they reach the end of their journey.
Not all goes to flame. Hundreds of them strike the earth each year.
Well, Russell, there's no danger.
Oh, no. The probabilities of being struck on the head by that cosmic rubbish is about 1,000 times more remote than winning a sweepstake without buying a ticket.
Well, look. That one. The brightest of all.
Wait, Diane. What's that?
I don't know. Something from
look
the
up.
Sky. It's shooting star.
Look out, Diane.
Russ.
All right, dear. Everything's all right.
What? How?
A meteor. Must have landed out in the field there. Here, let me help you. You all right, dearest?
Yes, I'm all right. Russ, where are you going?
Out there, where it must have buried itself. Wait here. I'll be right back.
No, no, I'm going with you.
All right, if you want to. Oh, Diane, what an experience we've had. The one chance in a million I spoke about almost occurred to us.
But, Russ, was it really a shooting star? That explosion like a bombshell?
A bombshell of the universe.
What will we find out there?
A fragment of the meteorite,
I hope. It'll burn.
No, no. All of its heat will have been dissipated. Then again, it may have exploded into 1,000 minute pieces. I pray to heaven that it hasn't.
I'm afraid.
No, no. The danger's all over. Here. The moon's so bright. If any of the mass landed, I should be able to find the torn ground where it smashed through the turf.
Oh, please, darling, let's wait until morning.
No, I must find the thing at once. The moon gives plenty of light. From the brightness of the flash, I'm positive that the meteor landed someplace right in here. I'll tell you. Look!
What?
The turf, all torn up. This is the place.
Russell, are you mad? Get up off the ground.
Right here. It must have struck a glancing blow off the brow of the ridge. I've got it.
What?
A fragment of it. Still warm. See? No larger than a baseball. All that was left of it.
That's a meteor.
A meteor, right. All that's left of the meteor that burned and exploded. What a find.
Drop it, Russ.
What are you talking
Throw
about?
Throw it away.
Yeah, come back to the house.
What are you going to do with it?
Diane, what's the matter with you? Your face.
I don't know. Somehow I'm afraid for all of us.
Afraid? Good heavens, my dear. There's nothing dangerous about this. A mass metal that's 90% iron. Why, it's as harmless as any inert piece of metal. Come to the study. I'll show you where the rush of air against the incandescent metal.
Russ, wait.
Huh?
Someone's crying.
Yes.
I'll go and see. It's Helga. Oh, Helga, you poor thing. We forgot all about you.
Oh, Mrs. Adams, it was exploding.
Now, now, everything's all right, Helga.
What's going on, Diane?
Oh, poor Helga. The explosion frightened her out of her wits.
Oh, Mr. Professor Adams, we die. We all die.
Don't be a
the
fool.
The fire, it come from the sky. It kill us. It kill you and me and everybody. We die. Everybody
stop it.
Die.
Stop it. For heaven's sake, stop that. Take care of her, Diane. Give her a sedative or something.
All right, Russell. All right, now, Helga. Everything's all right. Shh.
I'm going to get at this meteorite, so please quiet the dumb fool down as quickly as you can. Superstitious idiot. Simple phenomena, and she thinks the world's ending. Huh. Simple little meteorite. pan, a bit of nickel content. Nothing particularly unusual. Oh, Diane, quiet her down, will you?
Yes. Yeah. She'll be all right.
You look a little rocky yourself. Here, sit here.
She's very frightened.
Yeah, and even you, Diane.
Well?
You've acted so strangely, as if this inert piece of cosmic metal could cause some supernatural ability.
What are you going to do with it?
Nothing. Examine it. Here, I'll take some of this nitric acid. Where's that bottle? There. Now watch closely, and I'll show you that this stone consists of ordinary elements. Iron.
Russell.
What?
This mark on it. How strange.
Funny, I hadn't noticed it before.
Circles the entire stone.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised that a blow right here would break it in half. Yes, I think I'll try to do that.
No, Russ. Leave it alone.
Good heavens, Diane. Nothing but a stone. All I'm going to do is try and break it along this fissure. See, I had a hammer. Sure. Yeah. What if the stone break? Almost solid metal. I'll try. By George, it did. Clean in half. What?
Look. What's inside?
Flesh.
Oh, Russ, how...
Negative gray protoplasmic. No, it can't be. It can't. This is a meteor. It came from out there. There is no flesh. Nothing could live.
Russ, look.
Huh?
It's growing.
Growing?
Ladies and gentlemen, a shooting star flashes out of the sky and falls to Earth. And in it, something living from out of interstellar space. Yes. Yes, this is the time to take a breath before going on with tonight's Lights Out play, the story of Professor Adams and his wife and the thing from out beyond our world. A meteorite had fallen, and Professor Adams had broken it open, and there was a gray nugget of flesh inside, which, even as the professor and his wife stood watching, began to grow.
And faster. Gray flesh. Growing. Oh, Russ, I'm afraid.
No, Diane, no. Wait, control yourself. This is something we've got to see, both of us, calmly, so we can tell others clearly what we saw.
I'll try. Oh, Russ, keep your arm around me.
Larger and larger. Listen, the noise as it grows.
I hear it. When will it stop? When?
Look. Look.
I can't. That horrible gray flesh.
But you must see it. Look. It's forming into something.
What?
A head. It's forming into a head.
Oh!
How can it be, Diane? Flesh in a meteor growing. Growing into a head.
I see it. A head. Horrible head.
Diane, you heard.
Yes.
The head without body speaking.
Yes, speaking.
Russell.
You hear and understand me?
Thick lips laughing.
I laugh at the fear and wonder in your simple little faces.
Who are you? What are you?
If I told you, would your little earth minds understand?
Tell us, whatever you are. Tell us what you are.
What you on earth will soon have for masters.
No, 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 wait, Diane. I must know. You thing, what can I call you? Tell me what you mean, you masters.
Surely you... Simple little men, do not think that in you creation has reached the ultimate.
No. Gray flesh talking. I'm getting out.
You will stay.
Russ, I can't move.
Nor I.
You cannot move.
Who are you? Tell us, who are you?
You saw how I came.
A tiny bit of protoplasm in that meteorite?
So I willed myself to be. to reach your Earth.
You came here in that? Through space?
Through space beyond your furthest conception, Earth thing. Many of my people have tried. I am the first to succeed.
Then meteors are
the means we have used to try and reach this haven of plenty. I am the first. Now there will be others.
You're from another planet?
An old world. Old beyond your understanding. A world grown cold in its age. Empty with passing years. We must escape to a young, fertile world. This world.
But you're only heads. Heads without bodies.
Oh, Russ, I'm so afraid.
No, please. I must hear him speak. This that is happening to us is a miracle of all times. Tell me, you there, are you only heads in that world you speak of?
Heads. You see what I will you to see.
But what are you?
A mind and a will beyond your feeble understanding. As far above you as you are above the apes that still must crawl in your jungle.
But how can it be that you speak as I speak and understand what I say?
Your prattling wearies me. But I tell you this. All that you say, I know. The most profound thought any of you earth things have ever thought is to me as the babbling of children. But now I am hungry. You understand that, little thing.
Hungry?
Hungry?
Hungry with a hunger that has driven me over space without ending. Hunger that has brought me here.
But what do you eat?
You will know.
What do you mean?
What food could there be here to fill the hunger of such as I? Hunger that would make me entomb myself in metal, flung into space in a hope that chance would bring me through the fire of that air of yours. What food? Earthing.
I don't know. Tell me.
Come closer, Earthing.
Oh, no.
And why, oh, no, Earthing?
You don't... Human?
Human. You think you crawling worms are human to us.
But if you're man...
But we are not man. You are the cattle, and we are the keepers.
Oh.
You raise the cattle for life, and we for centuries have raised such as you on our world for life. But now, as I told you, our world has grown too old and too cold. The herds of you die, and we grow hungry. That is why I am here. We need new cattle. Here there are so many of you. Earth woman.
Russell, it spoke to me.
We've got to get out of here.
Earth woman.
No. Stop it. Don't look at me. Stop it.
Come closer.
No. Don't listen to him, Diane.
closer.
No, no. Don't move, Diane. Stay where you are. Stay right there.
You hear only me, Earth woman.
Only you.
No, Diane. No. Don't say that. Don't look at that monster, Diane.
Closer, Diane.
Yes.
No.
Closer.
No, Diane. Stand still. Don't move toward it. Don't.
Closer,
no,
Diane.
No, no. Then.
Closer.
Monster. Not Diane. Diane, I beg of you. Don't go closer to it.
Closer.
No.
Closer.
No. I'll kill you.
Closer.
If I could only get to you.
Soon you will move to me as she is. Closer.
No. Diane.
Closer.
If I could move.
Closer.
Diane.
Closer.
I've got to find the way.
Closer.
The strength to stop him.
Closer.
Diane, you're almost.
Closer.
I've got to.
Closer.
That bottle. Nitric acid.
Closer.
The bottle. Yes. Yes, close to you, monster. Take this. A pool of flesh. Flesh. That's all. Diane, wake up. Open your eyes. I've killed the thing. I killed it.
Oh,
Diane, it's all right.
Russell.
Oh. I've killed it.
Oh.
Diane, look. Outside, it's still dark. Yes, the sky's still streaked with the rush of meteorites. And that thing said more of the monsters of his breed are trying to reach this earth to feel that devil's hunger in them. Another meteorite is just... And in it, perhaps... Oh, Diane. Diane. Is that truly to be end for mankind?
Mr. Obler, will the end of the world come that way?
Well, Frank, if you mean, will the end for mankind come out of interstellar space in the form of a flying meteor? Well, there are some mighty interesting theories along that line. The amazing thing about it, Frank, is that there are so many logical and thoroughly possible ways in which the entire tribe of mankind could be wiped off the earth at any moment. I'm not talking about famine or what's close to all of us, war. I mean other ways. A star moves into our darkness from somewhere out there in the blackness of interstellar space, and the pull of its presence might turn our spinning globe headlong into the sun. In a split second, all of mankind, all his buildings, his wonderful possessions, his precious little pile, would go up in a flash of fire. Or out of the sun itself, the very source of our life, as we all know, could shoot a long stream of explosive flame that would curl around us and again, well, so quickly that no man would know what had happened. In split seconds, this Earth would be a charred, uninhabited spheroid. Yes, when one stops to think what a tiny little grain of sand this haughty world of ours actually is in the dark sea of space, and when we realize how precarious little mankind's hold is on this Earth, the spectacle of man's inhumanity to man becomes a cosmic joke.
Well, all of those things are certainly interesting to think about, Mr. Obler, but tell us now, what's going to happen next week?
Next week, Vos Triste. No, that's not a dance. It's a story of chance. That unpredictable chance that makes one man a saint and the next man a Hitler. The flip of a coin, the turn of a card, the bend of a road. I think you'll like what we have to offer you, but as usual, next week.
Lights Out will come to you again next Tuesday at this same time. Be sure to listen to Arch Obler's weird story of Vos Triste.
It is later than you think.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
A will and a mind beyond our feeble understanding. Well, that about sums up politics for this week. I'd like to thank Nick Palucco for the wonderful show graphics and Dennis Baum and Hawk Productions for his wonderful intro that I use every single week. Todd Sheets is the owner and produces the show. And I'd like to thank a special shout out to Waleed Al-Haddad, who helps me find interesting topics to keep you intrigued and thrilled every single week here at Savage Science Radio. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you. I hope you have a wonderful week, and keep your powder and your pants dry, and happy trails until we meet again.